hubbardbroadcasting.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's been a very, very exciting week with the big Apple announcement about the iPhone 6, the iPhone 6 Plus. And I was surprised to see they came out with the Apple Watch.
Yeah.
There were rumors. Of course, you can't buy the Apple Watch until next year.
Which is kind of a disappointment because that would be a big Christmas item.
It would be a big Christmas item. And this week, we had the grand opening of our new Alexandria campus.
Oh, really?
It was a big event. We actually had the mayor there, the mayor of Alexandria, Mayor Ewell, came and spoke and gave a very nice presentation. He is, I have to say, an education mayor. He was on the school board. He is devoted to education there in Alexandria. We're certainly glad to be there. We're gonna partner with the Alexandria government there, and also with the Economic Development Commission and the Chamber of Commerce, and create the type of education that Alexandria needs to train their workforce. And so, we're very excited to be there. It was a grand event. We're right off the Beltway there, our building. If you drive, we're right at Telegraph Road. And just when you get to the Telegraph Road exit on the Beltway, you just look over and we've got the whole building. We're right off there, right off the Beltway. We've got big signage, and so we're very proud of that campus. That's our seventh campus in the U.S.
That's a good place to be. It's a great location.
It certainly is. And, of course, there were many other things that occurred this week. Everybody's trying to, you know, button up the hatches after this big iCloud iCloud event. You know, they call that Celebgate now. it has a new name, Celebgate. I'm thinking they should call it Nudegate, but I guess they call it Celebgate. And so people are trying to button up the hatches. I'm going to explain today how you can actually set up authorization system for your iTunes account. That would be much better. You know, two-factor authorization. They don't have it available yet for the iCloud, but Tim Cook announced that they're going to put two-factor authorization on the iCloud when the operating system 8 comes out, and that's the one that came out with the new iPhone. So we'll talk a bit about that. And there was another huge credit card security breach, Home Depot.
This
could even be larger than Target. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Giant.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Whew.
Wow.
It's a giant mailbag. These are very, very heavy emails.
Very heavy.
Yeah, heavy electrons. We got an email from Peggy in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, I live in a single-family home in Bethesda. I got Fios shortly after moving here, and I don't have the bundle. I just get the internet, and I was paying around $39 a month. And then when my charge card expired, I had to re-up it, and they increased my monthly rate to $47 a month. And they said they gave me a faster internet connection, Fios. But, you know, I'm checking it. It actually seems to be slower. My friend looked at it, and he said, you're not even getting the minimum download speed. You're not getting what you paid for. So what can I do about this? Peggy. Well, Peggy, this is how bandwidth is sold to consumers. It is not guaranteed bandwidth. It's maximum possible bandwidth.
Really?
So it could very well be that at 3 a.m. in the morning, you can get the bandwidth, but they start sharing those data pipes with a lot of your neighbors, and it could be that during peak times, there's not enough capacity in the trunk line to give you the maximum bandwidth. Now, if you want guaranteed bandwidth, you've got to pay a lot more money for that. So we've got, for instance, at all of our Stratford University locations, I buy guaranteed bandwidth, and I'm telling you, it is at least 5 times more expensive.
Wow, really?
Yeah, because they guarantee it even during peak times, which means they always have the capacity to handle you. So they actually have to build up their infrastructure to have more and more guaranteed bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
So my story is that I upgrade, because I like having the fastest internet on the block. So I upgraded to Verizon's Fios fastest internet. You know what? It didn't get any faster for me. And I'm paying $15 a month. And it feels to me like it's slower. So I'm the same victim that you are in this deal. And so now I'm trying to figure out how to cancel that enhanced bandwidth with Verizon. It's easy to sign up for it, but it's just a little harder to cancel
it.
So I've got to log on and figure out how to do that. And I think I'm in the same boat. But you can always – I like to go to broadbandreports.com to check my upload and download speed. So you can always check your speed. So I noticed you had a speed report. I like to use broadbandreports.com, and I pick one of the local servers. It's free, and it will give you upload and download speeds. And so you might try it at – you know, some night when you're up at 3 a.m., why don't you just try it during the off hours to see whether you get more speed. Now, there is another issue that could be occurring. You see, there's bandwidth comes into your house, and then it goes out onto a Wi-Fi network within your house. Now, if you've got an older computer and you're using 802.11b, for instance, the bandwidth on your and if you've got a lot of interference in the neighborhood, your Wi-Fi bandwidth could be a limiting factor. Now, if you've got if you don't have a lot of computers on it, and you don't have interference from your neighbors, that may not be the case, but it could be possible that you have that issue. So because you're basically cascading two networks together, you got the Fios network and you got your Wi-Fi network. So, that's worth looking at in case that could be an issue. But actually, if you're not getting the bandwidth, I would just back off and get their lowest offering, and then pay less per month. Mm-hmm. That was a good email and a common problem. We got an email from Knock in Ohio. It's another one of the Ohio bunch.
Uh-huh.
Dear Tech Talk, I'm afraid that someone has my Gmail password, and I can't figure out how to change my password because I don't want anybody looking at my account. Please help me. Thanks. Knock in Ohio. Well, Nock, changing your Gmail password is actually quite easy, but you've got to be able to log on to your Gmail account first. If you can't log on, you can't change the password. So log on to the email account, and then in the upper right-hand corner of the page, click on your email address, and that drop-down menu will show up, and you'll see something called Account. Click on Account, and then on the Account page comes up, there's something called Security Link. There's a security link tab near the top. Click on that. And then you'll see on that page something that says change the password. And then you'll click on that and you'll get the typical password change dialog. You have to enter your old password first to confirm you are who you are. You enter your new password twice to make certain that you don't mistype it. And then you hit change password and you're done. Now, always make certain to have a robust password. Now if you want something that's never going to get hacked with a brute force attack, you could use 12 characters and that with random letters and numbers, and that's going to take a very long time to crack. And in fact, they probably would give up before they would crack it. You could probably go with an 8-digit password. If 87 years would be appropriate time to hack it. But don't go anything less than 8, and always have a combination of upper, lowercase, and symbols so there's more characters that they have to search through if they want to crack it. So that was a very good email, Knock, and I hope you can secure your Gmail account so nobody can look at it. We got an email from Alex in Fairfax. Dear Doc and Jim, How do I figure out who owns an IP address? Someone at this particular IP address keeps posting anonymously to Wikipedia, and I want to find out who it is. Thanks, Alex in Alexandria. Well, Alex, let's talk about a little bit about IP addressing. IP addressing is the address of your computer on the internet. And so an IP address, if it's IP version 4, it's basically 32 bits. It's 4 bytes, as they say, and it's a 32-bit number. And so that address is unique for every computer. And so you cannot duplicate IP addresses on the internet, otherwise they wouldn't know how it would be routed. Now, the problem is that the IP address that you're using has been given to you by your internet service provider, your ISP. So, for instance, Verizon is going to buy a block of IP addresses, and when you log into your account, they'll give you one of those IP addresses to use as your external IP address. And typically, they'll keep giving you the same IP address. So you're not guaranteed to have the same one every time, usually you do. And so you'll have that IP address. So somebody could look up your IP address and they'd say, oh, it's part of the Verizon block. But that's not going to identify who they are.
Mm-hmm.
If you want Verizon to cough up that information, you need a search warrant.
Really?
Yeah. Verizon will not reveal whose IP address it is. I mean, that's sort of confidential information.
Sure.
So you wouldn't want Verizon to just, you know, passing out that data to anyone. So Verizon or all the ISPs, they're going to keep that secret. So they can actually trace it all the way back to you and your house if there is a search warrant. And so if there's a criminal case or if there's some, you know, the police are looking for some kind of child pornography or something, they'll get a search warrant and they'll go to Verizon and they'll find it. And so that would be, you know, so you're not going to be able to get as specific information as you would like. Now, on the other hand, suppose that there's a block of IP addresses that's purchased by George Washington University and somebody is logging on from the GW campus and updating it. You're going to see the IP address of George Washington University. So it could be that you could figure out what organization is doing it because, for instance, there were a lot of updates, anonymous updates to Wikipedia that are relating to politicians, and people looked it up, and those IP addresses were traceable back to the Senate or the House. So they knew somebody there was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the politicians were, like, updating and sort of, you know, enhancing their Wikipedia presence. But you could trace it, but you couldn't prove exactly who did it. You just knew that it was going back to that particular location. Now, there are two ways to sort of track this down. Okay, with that caveat, knowing that you can't really get the exact person, you can figure out where the block is and who owned the block. So one way to do that is use Whois. It's a service. What I like to do is I like to use the ARIN service, which is the American Registry for Internet Numbers, ARIN. And you just go to whois.aaron.org. Let me see here. Yes, I can. And then what you do, once you come up with the Aaron Whois directory, in the upper right-hand corner, just put in the IP address, and it returns back all the information which block it was. So I just tested it. I put in the IP address that Verizon had assigned me at home, and bingo. I went in Aaron. It told me you got the Verizon block out of Silver Spring.
And Aaron is spelled A-R-I-N.
A-R-I-N. And so it's the Whois directory at Aaron. So you could probably just Google A-R-I-N Whois, and it'll take you right there. Now, you could also do a reverse DNS. A reverse DNS is you can put in the you can put in the domain name and it gives you the IP address. And so that sometimes gives you more information that you can do. And so you could go to, you can actually use, that's very easily done. And you can go to a place to get that. Just put reverse DNS, who is, and you'll come up with a link there. And then what you do, you just click in, like for instance, I could put in stratford.edu, and it will give me the IP address of Stratford and who owns it. So in that case, you're going from the domain name back to the IP address. So you can go both ways, either with who is or with the reverse DNS. So that was a very good question, and many people are wondering about that. And the reason, by the way, that people use anonymous browsing like Tor is that, in fact, the authorities can always pin down the IP address to the person who's using it.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have no anonymity on the internet at all if people can see your IP address. And so the government could get a court order, and they could track down exactly who was doing what. And so these anonymous browsing systems like Tor, which is called the Onion Router, you can basically surf the web using Tor. And what Tor does, you go to a proxy server and you're with an encrypted link, and then from that proxy server, it's referred to another proxy server and another proxy server. And you might have it forwarded through 5 or 6 or 8 proxy servers on the internet. And then finally, you go to the source where you want to go. And so if you would, say, do an anonymous updating of Wikipedia through Tor, the IP address that would show up would be one of the IP addresses, would be the IP address of the last Tor server that you went through. And that cannot be traced back to you because it's been cascaded through multiple servers.
Wow.
So there are a lot of people who just want to do anonymous surfing, and they use that. And this is particularly used in countries that oppressive countries where bloggers do not want the government to know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So they go through Tor, and that was actually developed by, you know, the government. It was developed at the Tor technology was developed at Naval Research Lab, and now the encryption is so good that NSA is, you know, trying to crack Tor because they want to track down people. Well, that was a very, very good question.
Yes.
And I think we love all your emails.
We do, indeed.
So just send us emails to techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll either email you back directly or else we'll cover your email on the show.
And you're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio. It's Saturday morning, and this is 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2 on the web, techtalkonline.com and federalnewsradio.com. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn by doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Oh, Mr. Big Voice is on the money today.
Two for two.
Today we're going to be featuring Harold Thomas Finney. That's what his mother called him,
Harold Thomas
Finney. Harold Thomas, yeah. Harold Thomas Finney was a crypto activist. So he was in cryptography, and he liked to develop software that would allow people to be anonymous. So, and because he didn't trust the government. So he was a crypto activist. He was a key developer of PGP, which is pretty good privacy and encrypted one of the first open source encrypted email protocols out there. And he was a recipient of one of the first Bitcoin transfers from Satoshi Nakamoto. And so, of course, Bitcoin and many of the encryption techniques used in Bitcoin were actually developed as part of PGP. So he was in the whole area of digital currency, too, because he would like the government to be out of the currency business. So he particularly liked Bitcoin and that whole thing. Harold Thomas Finney was born May 4th, 1956, in Coalinga, California. You know where the Coalinga? Have you ever been there?
I've not been there, but I've heard of Coalinga, California.
Coalinga. He received.
You find out where that is.
Yeah, check. I'd never really heard of that before. He received a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from Caltech in 1979. After he graduated from Caltech, he went to work in the computer gaming field for a company that developed games, and he worked on a couple of games, Astro Blast and Space Attack. Now, in 1991, he started doing volunteer work on a new software project called PGP, Pretty Good Privacy. And it was initially an open source kind of project, and he immediately became one of the central players. PGP was designed to make it possible for anyone to encrypt their email so that the government, for instance, could not be eavesdropping on what they were saying. The concepts used in PGP were deployed both in Tor, that I talked about previously, the Onion router for anonymous browsing, as well as in Bitcoin. Now, the original author of PGP, Philip Zimmerman, I've featured him on Tech Talk previously, he became a target of a federal investigation because the U.S. has laws against exporting military-grade encryption software, and they said PGP is so good that you're helping the enemies hide stuff from us. So they started investigating him. They were going to put him in jail. This only reinforced Harold Thomas Finney's, distrust of the government. So while the investigation went on, Finney continued to develop PGP, but he did it secretly because he did not want the government agents showing up at his house.
Sure.
So because he was actually doing it secretly, much of his innovative work that was done on PGP was really never known. In fact, Zimmerman said Finney made so many contributions to PGP, but never really got credit for it because he did it all secretly in order to avoid the feds coming in and trying to arrest him. Now, in 1996, after 5 years, they concluded the big investigation, no charges filed. And PGP, and then Zimmerman said, okay, I'm clean. Let's form a company. So they formed PGP, a new company, which was designed to market this encryption, the software encryption tool. And the first employee that Zimmerman hired, of course, was Finney, because he was like the guy who was like his number one lieutenant programming in the background. Now, he stayed with Finney. Finney stayed with PGP until he retired in 2011. Now, while working at PGP, Finney was a regular participant in a number of what they called futurists mailing lists, and these futurist mailing lists gave birth to the cyberpunk movement. And these were cyber activists that were looking at ways to keep the government out of their business through better and better encryption tools, and they became known as cyberpunks or cyber activists. Now, he was involved in many experiments aimed at creating forms of autonomous digital money. And he invented his own form of a digital money that he released in 2004 as a reusable, what they call proof of concept software release. This actually predated Bitcoin, and so he was actually ahead of Bitcoin in release, but his particular version of digital currency was actually never picked up. Now, the idea for Bitcoin was actually released in an email to the cryptography, group in 2008. And the email came out, was sent by a guy by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto. And they really don't know who this guy is. It's probably a pseudonym. They've never really tracked on who he was. And so Finney, because he was so interested in the digital currency, he, even though not many people took Nakamoto's email seriously, Finney did because he was in that business, and he started writing back, asking questions about it. And during his Bitcoin experimentation, Finney corresponded with Nakamoto. He sent him a series of bug reports and suggestions for fixes, and he really liked working with Satoshi Nakamoto because he was such a good programmer. Finney downloaded some of the early Bitcoin code and began running it on an IBM PC. On January of 2009, Nakamoto sent Finney the first ever transfer of Bitcoins. He actually gave him 10 Bitcoins. He transferred 10 Bitcoins to Nakamoto, which at the current value, one Bitcoin's worth $500, so that would be worth $5,000. But, of course, back then they weren't worth anything. Mm-hmm. It was just an experiment. So he transferred 10 Bitcoins, and Finney said, I was going to return those, but then I forgot. So he never returned those 10 Bitcoins. Finney downloaded the Bitcoin mining software, and he began mining Bitcoins. And since he was right there at the very beginning, the first Bitcoins were really easy to get because they get more and more difficult as more Bitcoins have been taken and it gets exponentially more difficult. But in the beginning, it was easy to get the Bitcoins going. So he had a single IBM PC, and he was able to mine as many as 100 Bitcoins a day using this thing. So, but at that point, nobody thought Bitcoin. They thought it was just an experiment. Nobody paid attention to it. So what he did, he let his computer just sit there cranking away for a couple of weeks. And then finally, his son said, Dad, this computer's just getting so hot. You're going to wear your computer. Why don't you turn it off? So he just turned it off, and he quit mining them after a couple of weeks. Turned out he had mined about 1,000 Bitcoins.
Jeez.
Now, at the current value, that's worth $500,000. If he would have kept mining them, he could have been a multimillionaire, but he turned it off. This, he said later, was the biggest financial mistake he ever made.
Wow.
So what he did, he took these Bitcoins and he copied them. He copied the encryption codes, which, storing the Bitcoins, onto a DVD so he wouldn't lose them. And then they just put the DVD on the shelf, and it started gathering dust. Later on, because just recently Bitcoin just shot up in value, he realized that, okay, these Bitcoins could be worth something, so he pulled it off the shelf, dusted them off to make certain it was still there, and sure enough, he still had $500,000 worth of Bitcoins. At one time, Bitcoins went up to $1,200 a Bitcoin. Now they're down to about $470. They sort of fluctuate. So when they were $1,000, a Bitcoin, that would have been worth $1,000,000, you see. So he thought, well, this is a good legacy for my kids. Now, the thing that I felt was exceptional with Finney was that his optimistic outlook. He even when he had severe barriers and severe problems. In 2009, he learned that he had ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and he withdrew for a while from all the forums, and he was not really an active participant. By March 2013, Finney was essentially paralyzed, but he could still move his eyes. And he was working on experimental software called BFlick, which was used by trusted computers to strengthen Bitcoin wallets. Mm. I went back and I looked at some of his blogs after he was paralyzed. And he was saying how thankful he was and how lucky he felt that he had been to be able to program, and that he could still program, and he could still contribute, and he felt like a very lucky man for having been able to achieve something with his life that was significant. And this is when he had, you know, many people just give up, and he was still writing code by just by blinking his eyes to control things. I thought that was extraordinary.
That's amazing.
I went back and I started reading some of his blogs, and he had extraordinary willpower, and so I thought I'd feature him. And if you look up Harold Thomas Finney, you'll find his blogs, and these are really blogs worth reading. Now, Hal Finney, his friends called him Hal. Only his mother called him Harold Thomas.
Right.
His friends called him Hal. Hal Finney died in Phoenix August 28th, 2014, just last month, at age 58. And he wanted, his body was cryopreserved. You know, it was frozen, put in liquid nitrogen and frozen by the Alcor Life Extension Foundation. So he's hoping that maybe they'll freeze his body, and then in 200 years, they'll unfreeze it, and they'll have a cure for ALS.
Mm-hmm.
That's a highly...
Highly doubtful.
Highly doubtful, but, you know, that's what he wanted to do. By the way, he used his bitcoins to help defray some of his medical expenses
His
later years.
Hmm.
So this is one of the unsung heroes in technology. You see, he never really was focused on money. He worked on PGP, which is really, he was working essentially in open source code. Then he worked on the digital currency, essentially giving all of his work to the community and not seeking money. He was one of the, so much of our technology is based on people like him. And I just really loved reading the story of his life, even though it ended so tragically, because he had such willpower.
Yeah.
So there you go. Harold Thomas Finney, the crypto activist. And one of the first people to mine bitcoins, and probably the first person to receive a bitcoin transfer from the originator of Bitcoin, Satoshi Nakamoto.
Coalinga, California, is southwest of Fresno and northwest of Bakersfield. So it's northern California, south of San Jose. It's the middle of nowhere, actually.
Yeah, but it makes sense it would be around San Jose area.
Right,
where
all
the tech stuff is going on.
This is Tech Talk Radio. Hope you're paying attention, because you will get your chance not to win bitcoins, but free food coming up here on the Pop Quiz. In just a moment on Tech Talk Radio, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to the Classroom of the Airways. Now, you might have thought this was a radio show, but actually it's a classroom.
You'd be wrong.
It's a classroom of the airways. And, of course, if it is a classroom, we have to assess whether you're actually doing your homework and listening to the professor. And we do that with a pop quiz.
Uh-huh.
If you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you'll get two tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room or the Korean Dining Room. Soon we'll be opening up the dining room at Alexandria,
oh, cool.
But we don't have a name for that yet.
Okay.
We'll have to have a naming party.
A naming contest
there in Alexandria. So earlier in the show, I was talking about Harold Thomas Finney, the crypto activist who was a key developer of PGP and also one of the who received the first transfer of bitcoins from Satoshi Nakamoto. Now, as he went through his life, he basically did a lot of work open source. He wasn't really, going after money. But there was one thing that he did that did bring in quite a bit of money. And then he made the biggest financial mistake in his life. What would that have been?
Well, you need to call us right now if you have the answer to that question. If you're calling from west of Phoenix, Arizona, it's 877-936-9333. East of Coalinga, California, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line is 877-936-9333.
And, of course, if you are in Kazakhstan, you can connect to us with Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded to the studio free of charge.
I think you have bigger problems in the pop quiz if that's where
you're. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll hold it. I'm going to Kazakhstan in a while. So maybe,
Okay. I'm wrong. Sorry.
But there could be big problems
over
there.
There could be.
I'm hoping that there aren't.
I'm hoping there aren't either.
Okay. So what are we going to... The feds found out how to locate the Silk Road servers. Now, of course, the Silk Road servers were being used for laundering drug money and various other types of activities, and they were trying to locate them, and it turned out that the owner of the Silk Road servers his sort of screen name was Dread Pirate Robay, and his real name was Ross Ulbrich. And the feds were looking for him, and they were looking for the servers. Now, so he had his Silk Road servers. They were on the web using Tor so that they could have anonymous locations so the feds couldn't track them. But what he did with the server, he had a CAPTCHA on that. The CAPTCHA is where you want to fill out a form. And then you have to look at a picture, and then you have to say, what does the picture look like, so that they know it's a person and not a computer trying to fill out the form. So Ross Ulbrich had a CAPTCHA on his website. He did not configure the CAPTCHA to use Tor. So what happened was they would talk to this website, and they would have all of these Tor addresses coming back. But every time they would log on with the form and the CAPTCHA would come in, it would come in from the actual IP address of the server.
Wow.
This was a big screw-up.
Yeah.
So the government actually located the server. By locating the server, they went the IP address. They went to the Internet Service Provider. He told them exactly where the server was located. They went and got the server, and then they arrested Ross. But then the issue was the government had to show that they located the server using methods that did not violate any rights. They couldn't do something improperly, and so they had to describe how they got how they actually located it. So I actually read the section of the U.S. District Court filing that explained how they got this IP address, and they said, so it was all open source, and it was just. They called it leakage from the CAPTCHA.
Interesting.
So there you go. That's all you want to know about a leaky CAPTCHA.
There you go. And we have a participant in our little game we call the pop quiz. Let's go to line number one. This is Marshall, who is calling from Rockville, Maryland. Good morning, Marshall. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Dr. Schertz,
yes.
Please ask the question.
Earlier in the show, I talked about Harold Thomas Finney, the crypto activist. What was the biggest financial mistake that he ever made?
Only mining 1,000 bitcoins. He stopped there.
Yeah. That works.
Okay, very good. Yes, indeed. He only mined 1,000. He turned off the servers. Very good. You win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room. Just give your name and address to Andrew. and we'll get those tickets out to you next week.
Marshall, thank you for listening. Thanks for calling. And this is Tech Talk Radio, and you're listening to us on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. You can find us online at techtalkonline.com and federalnewsradio.com. Stand by. A lot more Tech Talk coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn by doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Earlier in the show, I was talking about, you know, tracking down where an IP address is located. And I want to give you the addresses for these Whois servers more accurately. The Whois server at Aaron is whois.arin.net. And then you simply put in the IP address, and it will tell you where, you know, who owns it. Whois.arin.net. And if you want to do the reverse DNS lookup, you go to whois.domaintools.com. Whois.domaintools.com. So there you go. Let's talk about the iPhone 6 now.
Yes.
Finally, after all of the rumors and the hype, it's out. We had the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus. The iPhone 6 has a 4.7-inch screen, and the iPhone 6 Plus has a 5.5-inch screen. So they're trying to compete with the with the Samsung.
How big is the Samsung? Do you know what the screen size on that is?
It's a little bit bigger.
A little bit bigger than the 5.5?
It's a little bit, you know, maybe 5.7 or something. I don't know exactly. It's just a little bit bigger. But they're basically trying to compete there. Now, they made a few minor improvements. Oh, by the way, there's no Sapphire. You know, there's this big thing they were going to put Sapphire on the iPhone 6. No Sapphire.
Really?
Because there's going to be a Sapphire on the Apple Watch. There was a yield problem with the Sapphire.
Oh, no kidding.
And when they had to make the go, no-go decision, the Sapphire wasn't ready.
Huh.
So the Sapphire is going to be on the next gen of iPhone.
Well, I was going to say, that's the next thing they can do.
It'll be the next gen of iPhone. And then you'll have a much, you know, more robust display that you can't scratch or break. Now, there are just minor improvements in the camera. The camera is still 8 megapixels, so they didn't add more pictures. They have a faster processor, A8 processor. It's 50% faster graphics, 25% faster CPU. But the real news is the change screen size and the payment system. That's the real news. Now, the focus is the display looks the camera actually, because there's a faster processing speed, the focus is a little bit faster. So it, you know how it auto focuses? Now the autofocus is faster because it has a faster processor. The colors look a little more lifelike when the flash is on. You know how sometimes flash kind of flattens out the colors? So now they've got more dynamic range adjustment, so you don't have this color flattening when you turn on the flash. And that's allowed because they've got a faster processor. And the imaging chip has better ways to handle noise. So if you're in a low light area, you won't have so much graininess because it can process out the noise better. Also, high dynamic range, HDR, is now automatically applied well. So what they do with high dynamic range, have you ever seen a picture where maybe the person is standing in front of a window, and if you adjust the exposure for the person, then the background is too bright.
Right.
If you adjust it for the background, you can't see the person. So mm-hmm. what they do in high dynamic range imaging, they'll actually take the camera will automatically take five pictures or multiple pictures, and they'll bracket the exposure, and they'll take the picture that where the background looks good and combine it with the picture where the person looks good, and you get one picture, one composite picture that has both the person properly exposed as well as the background.
That's pretty amazing.
And so that's called high dynamic range because you can go from the dark to the bright and see it all. So you can turn on HDR, but there's a little delay because it has to take
sure.
a few pictures and does the processing. But it actually is quite nice. I was at a ball game once, and I had to take a picture, and the field was very bright, and the people were not so bright, and I used HDR and came out beautifully. So
nice.
So now the HDR is actually improved and it's automatic, and that's because it's a faster processor. Now they say that the battery will last 10 hours on 3G or 4G LTE. Now, that's like, I don't think that's been verified yet. I think that's just like the Apple sales
right,
literature,
sure.
you know. And it'll last 11 hours with Wi-Fi and video. Finally, they came out with near-field communication, NFC. This is after they'd resisted it for years. Now, the reason they didn't come out with it earlier is Apple likes to have a total solution. They wanted to create Apple Pay, all the vendors. They want to have everything worked out in the background because Apple's just not putting out near-field communication to have another widget on their phone. They want another source of revenue, and they want to be so integrated that they can actually drive the market. So what they did, they set up something called Apple Pay. Apple Pay. Now, it only works in the U.S. now, and it will work with the Passbook app on your phone. Passbook app is like where you can store tickets and things, you know, on your iPhone. You know, I use like when I travel, like get an airline reservation, I'll throw it into Passbook, and then I can get my electronic boarding pass right there. It's convenient. So they're putting Apple Pay into Passbook, and it will let you buy goods and services with a single touch of a phone. You just sort of bump your phone against the device, the transfer will be done. So unlike other mobile payment systems, the merchant never sees your credit card details. So it makes it very very convenient. Now, starting in the U.S., they actually have signed deals with Visa, MasterCard, and American Express. Apple Pay is backed by six major banks with more to come. Right out of the gate, you'll be able to use the service with 220,000 merchants accepting it, including Macy's, Walgreens, Reed Drugs, Whole Foods, and McDonald's.
You know, it's funny because the Whole Foods near your Baltimore campus just switched out all of the credit card readers to accomplish this.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus will launch in 8 countries on September 19th with pre-orders beginning September 12th. That was just yesterday. And in the U.S., the 16-gigabyte version will sell for $200 on a contract. I mean, it's really a $600 phone with $400 built into your payment. So like Verizon or AT&T would sell it for $199. Now, if you want to get 64 gigabytes, it's $100 more. It used to be you'd only get 32 gigabytes
right.
for $100 more. So now you get 64 gigabytes for $100 more. So that would be $300 payment. Now, if you want to get 128 gigabytes, you'd add another $100. That'd be $399. So they're offering this for AT&T, through Sprint, through T-Mobile, U.S. Cellular. Now, the question is, should you upgrade? And my opinion is, there's just no compelling reason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless you just crave a bigger screen and want to have the latest and the greatest, or if you really are craving virtual payments and want to get rid of your credit cards, there's really no reason to upgrade. So the only reason that I would upgrade, you know, I'm with Verizon. So all of these plans that have contracts, they basically put $20 a month into your payment. So over 2 years, they're collecting $480.
So this is so when they say $199, you're going to see an extra $20 every month.
It's built in. It's built into your plan.
But whatever your plan is now is going to go up another $20.
No. It's already baked in the plan. It's baked in the plan. So when they price their plan, they put that extra $20 in. So
what I'm getting at is, so you have a phone like me. I've got a 4. It's paid for, right? Mm-hmm. If I go out and get a 6, I'm not going to see any difference in the price of my plan?
You know, you're not going to see any difference. But if you don't upgrade, you're paying $20 a month for no reason.
Well, that's an important distinction.
So you see, so that's why these no-contract plans, it's sort of a sideline. That's why these no-contract plans are attractive, because there's no $20 a month built in.
No kidding.
You just pay cash for your phone.
When you want a phone.
And if you want to keep it for an extra 2 years, you just pay, you know, you're not paying for anything $20 a month. So what happens is that, so Verizon on these contracts, so they've built in $20 a month. So they don't care if you upgrade, because you're paying for it. And every 2 years you pay $480. Mm-hmm. And of course then they charge you $200 for the phone. So that's $580, $680. So you're paying $680 for the phone, actually.
Interesting.
All right, that's what they're doing. And all the carriers
do that.
I
didn't realize that.
And so if you don't upgrade, I mean, you're
losing out.
Force, if you're on a contract, you should upgrade as soon as you can.
So let me ask you this. So suppose you're pleased with the iPhone 4 and you have now essentially gone out of contract with that phone. Should you then just, you know, can you change your plan and come out of contract with AT&T and just continue to get service, but not pay that $20?
Well, that's what the Walmart plan is. The Walmart, you can go to Walmart and get Easy Talk.
Uh-huh.
And you can get the Verizon network through Walmart.
No kidding.
And it's $45 a month flat rate or something for like 2 gigabytes of data. So Walmart and other places are reselling the carrier's plans without a contract.
But AT&T won't do that for you directly.
But now, if you remember, T-Mobile started doing this.
Okay.
So now AT&T may be doing it to compete with T-Mobile.
But T-Mobile, I mean, let's get...
No, I wouldn't...
They don't have the... I mean, AT&T is inferior to Verizon, so T-Mobile isn't going to be that great, is it?
So, no, I would not go to T-Mobile, because they don't have a very good network. So... If you like, what I don't like about AT&T is that they won't unlock the phone when it's on contract.
I have huge problems with that.
With Verizon, when I'm on the contract, I get the phone unlocked at Verizon. And so, I tell you, I would not, because of that unlocking policy, I just would never use AT&T, period. Now, if you do not want to upgrade your phone, you're going to want to get a no-contract deal where you don't have the $20 a month built in. That means you're going to want to go to get the Walmart plan.
Sure.
And the nice thing about the Walmart plan is, if you don't like it, you just dump it after, you know. So
There's no penalty.
You use it a couple of months. You say, well, I don't like it. And you could go back to Verizon. So and you can transfer your phone number to Walmart if you want.
So and you said like 2 gig a month of
it's
of...
it's like 2 gig a month for $45, or if you want 4 gigs, it might be 65. If you want unlimited, 75 data. I mean, I use less than a gig every month. I don't watch movies on it. So I think the trend now is going to be unbundling, and we're going to get rid of these contracts.
Interesting.
Because people, that's what they do in Europe. They don't have these contracts in Europe. So the question we start out, should you upgrade? If you're on one of these contract plans and your phone is expired, you should upgrade because you've paid for the upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to upgrade, switch to a non-contract plan so you're not paying for a new phone when you don't want it. So
there you go.
There you go.
Excellent. Doc, I think based on the time, we should stay here and we should talk. Let's talk about the Apple Watch then, okay?
Okay, we'll talk a little bit about the Apple Watch. Now, Apple finally came out with their watch. I thought it would be called the iWatch, but they call it the Apple Watch.
Ah.
Not the iWatch. Now, the thing is, they put a microphone and a speaker in it. This is something I didn't expect. So you can actually hold it up and you can make a phone call like Dick Tracy.
I was going to say it's like the Dick Tracy phone.
So it's like you hold it up and it's got the little Dick Tracy phone. You're talking into it. Now I think people are going to look rather ridiculous walking around talking into their.
I think you're right.
So I don't think that's going to be a real use. But the mic lets you use Siri, Apple's digital assistant. So the speaker will allow. Oh, the other thing that the speaker does. You can sync it to somebody else's heartbeat because this iWatch detects the heartbeat,
and it
will give you a little beeping noise. So you can actually sync it to somebody else's heartbeat, and you can listen to their heartbeat with your iWatch. Now, with your Apple Watch, I really don't know why I would want to do that.
No, I don't either.
It seems like I'd want to listen to my own heart, you really have to have a quiet location to use the watch to make a phone call. And I'm thinking, why wouldn't you just like pick up the phone and make the
call?
That's
what the phone's for.
Now they really haven't released what the storage capacity is, but they will allow photos and music to be loaded onto the device. And so if photos and music are on the device, you can access them with or without the iPhone, which means that you could play music from your watch without your iPhone being present. I don't think that's so much useful. Now, it's integrated with the new pay plan. So you can go in there and you can leave your cell phone in your pocket and you just tap your iPhone against that thing and you can make a payment. And so it's got.
That's almost too easy.
So it's got near field communication. You just go. Just tap your wrist on there and then, so that's basically. Not a bad deal. So you can, and actually it will allow you to make that payment even if you're out without your iPhone because it's all integrated in the iPhone and it's linked into your iTunes account. So you can make a payment even without your iPhone present. Now, the real benefits here are all of this. They've got all kinds of accelerometers and things to monitor your health. So I think this is going to become a Fitbit where they can really monitor all kinds of stuff. It's got Bluetooth capacity, so you could wear wireless headsets to play music or take a call. It also has got Wi-Fi capability, so it can connect directly to Wi-Fi. So, and it's actually quite stylish. Now, it's going to cost $349. It has one other feature that's kind of nice. It's got this hold call function.
Uh-huh.
Suppose that you've got your watch on and your iPhone's in the bottom of the briefcase and the phone's ringing. And you can tap the watch, and it sends a message that says, "I got your call, but my phone's a little bit away, and I'll pick it up in just a minute," so they know to hang on.
Oh, that's neat.
So you can trigger that. It's also got this walkie-talkie feature, so you can actually send messages to people like walkie-talkies. You can draw a little picture here with your fingernail on the iPhone. You can send people pictures. You can tap different sensors and you can send sort of personalized messages using the walkie-talkie function. Now, the real thing with the Apple Watch are applications. Right now, there are really not that many useful applications.
Mm-hmm.
If they can get useful applications, they will in fact be able to really make the case. I think that's why they really delayed the release of this thing.
Gotcha.
I'll tell you, the show just passed by so quickly. We love all your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. And we want you to check out all the Stratford University programs in IT, business, health sciences, hospitality, culinary arts. Go to stratford.edu. Check out all those programs. We've got campuses and online programs. And let them know that you heard about those programs on Tech Talk Radio.
If you tuned in later, we'd like to hear the show in its entirety. It'll be rebroadcast at 4 o'clock today. We'll see you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
The NL East leading Washington Nationals against the Mets this evening here on Federal News Radio. Pre-game at 6:30, first pitch at 7 o'clock, although it is supposed to rain in New York later today. And we're going to get rain here in Washington as well. Going to be a rainy and cool day. Right now outside our studios in Northwest, it is dry. We're going up to a high of 76, right now 67 in Northwest at 10 a.m.
This paid commercial.